You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Charlie Zimmerman. Each month, we partner with The Hearth, a program where people gather to share true and personal stories. Today's story is from Tom Pike back in 2017. He tells of his life as a high-risk adventurer and his journey of self-discovery. He's introduced by Hearth founder Mark Iaconelli.
Our third teller before the break is Tom Pike. Tom's married to Megan Danforth and has two sons, Orion and Rowan. He works as a counselor and instructor at Rogue Community College. He spends his days making scrambled eggs, playing with his family, and wondering why his yard is so messy. I can tell you that why. A big hand for Tom.
So a few years ago, some relatives of mine shared with me that I was not expected to survive childhood. Came as sort of a shock, and it wasn't because I had a rare disease or illness, but they said it was due to my father's encouraging of risk-taking behavior. He encouraged us to do dangerous things, and if we backed away from the challenge, he might ridicule or cajole us in a teasing kind of way. So I learned from an early age, I better take risk and get comfortable with that. By the time I was 10, I had a brother who was a year older than me, so he was 11. They were dropping us off in Tuolumne Meadows in the high country in Yosemite and saying, you know where Uncle Jack and Aunt Jane live in Wawona. Here's a map. You can find your way. You know, and I don't even know, 3 or 4 days later, I actually honestly don't remember the trip. My brother reminded me of it a few years ago, and I said, God, I have one recollection, and I just remember seeing one of your high-top Converse tennis shoes melting on the fire, you know. So by the time I was, 13, I had a motorcycle. I had gotten into racing sailboats. We grew up in Ventura, California, and surfing. And by the time I was probably mid-teens to late teens, I was loading my I had a Laser, which is a 14-foot racing, kind of Olympic racing dinghy with a little tiny cockpit. But my friend Bob and I realized it was big enough for our sleeping bags wrapped in garbage bags and some spear guns and a loaf of peanut butter sandwiches. And we would head to the islands. We'd leave early in the morning under the cover of fog because the Harbor Patrol guys knew us. And if they caught us paddling out on the foredeck before the wind came up, they would surely turn us around. So we would kind of sneak out and then be gone for a couple of days and just kind of live off the ocean, and we fancied ourselves hunters. We'd carve sticks, and there were wild boars on the island. So we, you know, that never worked out, but we thought it was cool. So after college, I started seeking employment that was exciting and adventurous. My first job was working as a geologist in the Marshall Islands on Eniwetok Atoll, actually on a drill ship. So we were drilling core samples in atomic bomb craters. And trying to figure out, like, I actually didn't know what we were trying to figure out because it was classified and they wouldn't tell me. But people do get drunk. I worked midnight till noon, and some guy spilled the beans that we were trying to figure out what happened when an atomic bomb went off, you know. And so we ended up looking at core samples all night, and then in the daytime I spent most of the time in the water snorkeling and diving. And just wondering, like, I don't believe a bomb went off here because it was gorgeous. It was like coral reefs everywhere and tons of fish, including large sharks. It was kind of a famous place for large sharks. So there were tiger sharks and white sharks and smaller reef sharks, and we learned their behavior. You know, we thought we were cool. Oh, they're arching their backs. We keep our distance, you know, or don't pee in the water. They smell it. So two of my friends actually got bit and were medevaced to Honolulu. But that was a pretty awesome job. And then I progressed on to, I became a member of the Pacific Stock Exchange in San Francisco. So I was a stock options market maker. So I spent 6.5 hours a day in a trading pit yelling and screaming, you know, as loud as I could. And I got to be pretty good at that. Good enough so I only had to work 4 months a year. But the adrenaline was kind of unparalleled. I loved it. But there was also the kind of side effect of the stress, and a couple of my friends actually died of heart attacks in the pit. But I still thought it was a cool job, even though it was kind of killing this part of me that I wasn't really, I couldn't put a finger on it. But I got to work 4 months a year, spend 8 months a year traveling around adventuring. And I bought some wilderness property in Idaho on the Salmon River and spent a lot of time there kayaking. And I continued racing sailboats, raced to Hawaii. It was pretty awesome. My peak experience for feeling alive and close to powerful nature was one summer I spent in Guatemala climbing volcanoes and studying Spanish and working on some Peace Corps projects. And from the top of one volcano one night, I saw this other one like erupting, you know, on the horizon. I was like, that looks like a volcano erupting. And I thought, that's got to be climbed. That's awesome. And so I started asking about it, and everybody's like, nobody climbs that volcano. You know, it's too dangerous. Well, my Spanish wasn't that good, so I was like, I don't know what they're saying. So the next weekend, I was camping out on the base of the volcano and got up at like 3 in the morning and summited, a few hours after sunrise. And it was erupting. It was like Mount McLaughlin. It was 9,000 feet tall, and it was erupting like every 5 minutes. And luckily, it was really windy, so the upwind side of the cinder cone wasn't really much bigger than this room, and in the middle was like this 20 or 30 foot wide throat of the volcano that everything would come out of. And so I was like, I'll stand on the upwind side of the volcano, and when it erupts, everything pretty much goes that way. So I'm good. So I watched for about an hour. And it was phenomenal, especially from a geologic perspective, like Earth is birthing Earth, you know? And so it was like 30 seconds before an eruption, I would feel the mountain just start coming to life and shaking. And then it would start making noise like a freight train, like coming out. And then it would just, you know, explode. And it was awesome. And then I thought, you know, that throat of the volcano is not that far away. And in between eruptions, there's plenty of time. And even though there's poisonous gases, I could hold my breath. So I want to look in there. You know, what is down? That's theoretically, you can see the core of the Earth. So I held my breath, and I made a run for it. And when I got closer, I was like, this is not a good idea. You know, there's lava. And it's not like this clean margin where you just look in, you know. So I turn around in panic and ran back. I didn't realize that a month later it was going to blow up over a mile in the air with lava and ash and ruin a bunch of village homes like at the base of the volcano. So it was just getting ready for that, but I didn't know that. And so I kind of lived my life that way, and that adrenaline, that it gave me a feeling of aliveness that I had never felt, you know? The risk, something about it made me feel, I came alive, the intimate connection with the earth. And in reflecting back, though, those stories I just shared with you, there wasn't really ever really bravery. You know, it was kind of like adventuring. And there was some courage probably, maybe moments of bravery, but not really as a theme. I heard it said a few weeks ago that the two most important days in your life are the day that you're born and the day that you find out why. And I had definitely found out my why. I was very conscious of my why. It was just to have a lot of free time to explore the world and to take risks and feel that aliveness. But that was about to change because I was having some tea one rainy winter evening around my dining table in Mill Valley with two of my best friends that were visiting from out of town. And they knew me as well as anybody, probably be better. And in the middle of the conversation, they said, Tom, you're half dead. And I was like, I was kind of angry. I was like, what are you talking about, half dead? Like, you know, I'm on the top of my game trading. I travel and play and do all kinds of fun stuff 8 months a year, making tons of money, you know. But there was a part of me that felt defensive and kind of like I'd been found out or something. So I thought about it for a few weeks, and I realized, you know, there's something to that because I seek such extreme adventure, and that's when I feel the most alive. Why do I have to go to such extremes? You know, what does that say about what part of me is dead, or what don't I know about myself? So I got really curious, and I started what became a 12-year spiritual quest. And most of you are from Ashland, so you're like, oh yeah, spiritual quest. I think I've seen you, you know? So I got committed to a spiritual teacher for 10 years, and I did dozens of week-long seminars and drank ayahuasca in the Amazon, which I know some of you have done. And I did dream workshops, and I spent a lot of time in flotation tanks and meditating. And not to trivialize that decade, because it fundamentally changed my perspective on who I am and the universe and my place in the world. So it was very important to me. And it did require bravery, because what ended up happening was I started looking inside myself like I, you know, had been afraid to. I'd rather look down a volcano. And I started seeing things that were really unflattering, humiliating, scary. I didn't want other people to know. I didn't even want to know myself. And so I just want to share one story kind of exhibiting that before I close. And that is, I used to have this repetitive dream that I was, you know, different storylines, but I was defective. I was unlovable. I was not sufficient. And so I woke from a dream. This was only about 10 years ago in Ashland. I was sleeping next to my wife, wake up. Here's this dream. And I had a hole in the back of my neck. And no one could see it. Everybody looked at the front of me, but I knew it was there. And the doctor said, you know, it's incurable. Sorry. You know, there's no cure for that. So, you know, I went to write the dream down. And I realized that was like a way to protect myself. Because thinking about the dream is a lot safer than feeling it. And I was like, you know, I should feel this. This is really, you know, what this is about. I want to feel it. I want to get over this. I want to, you know, feel lovable. And so I just spread my arms and legs in bed, and I started breathing, and I invited the feeling. I am unlovable. And every breath, you know, it took everything I could to stay with that, and I wanted to curl up. You know, I wanted to like write it down. I wanted to scream. I wanted to leave. I didn't want to open to that at all. And I kept opening to it and breathing and just saying, what if that's true? Okay. And I just fed myself to that demon. Like, here I am. Go ahead. I'm tired of running from that. And over time, it became an electrical current that just flowed through my body, head to toe. And it was even more painful at that point. I just opened up and I was like, you know, there was no more thinking about it. It was just this uncomfortable current. And over time, it just diminished and I went to sleep. And when I woke up in the morning, I was like, something's different here, you know? And I realized that for maybe the first time in my life, I felt like pure love.
Tom works at Rogue Community College as a licensed mental health counselor and full-time faculty member. 2 years ago, he took a sabbatical from RCC and started Jump Education, a free educational consulting service that helps families and teens understand the benefits of early college and the best path for them to access it. That's it for today's exchange. I'm Charlie Zimmerman. Andrew Crackle is engineering our show today. Our theme music is composed by Maxwell and Terry Longshore. Thanks for joining us and have a great day.